All right, everybody, welcome to Tech Gumbo. I am Haggai Davis III, co-hosting with Haggai Davis II, and we would like to welcome you to our show. On Tech Gumbo, we talk about the past, present, and future of all things technology in a topical, interesting, and digestible way. We don't use geek speak or acronyms, we just want to talk about tech that is or will be important to you. We want to start by thanking Cardinal Capital. If you are a business owner or a CEO, hopefully you already have a good relationship with your bank. But if you're facing challenges such as a need to consolidate debt because you're in growth mode, you want to buy new equipment or just level out your cash flow, whatever your need or challenge, give Cardinal Capital a call because they have over 4,000 lenders where they source commercial capital for business clients. Chris, Gary, and Rob at Cardinal Capital have a passion for business. And they want your businesses to succeed. When you meet with Cardinal Capital, they get to know you and your business so they can present your needs to the lending institutions that will best fit your unique situation. In short, they go after money for your business. They translate your business into what's important to banks, and they are good at it. Depending upon what the deal is, no matter how complicated or straightforward, they will help maximize your profitability while setting your business up for success. They find the best solution for your situation, and here's the good part, they're easy and fun to deal with. For more information, visit their website at cardinalcap.net, call 225-308-3700, or email them info@cardinalcap.net.
All right, Mr. Davis, you ready for another helping the tech gumbo?
As always.
We'll start off with what's going on up there at your university.
NYU and Facebook are currently having an argument. NYU, a team from one of the divisions of NYU, was part of a politics and media research, had set up a plugin for browsers that users could download, and it would sit there and collect data about how Facebook was targeting political ads.
Yeah, they were using a system to uncover the systemic flaws in Facebook's ad library to identify the misinformation in political ads. They were doing a scientific study. They were doing actual research. And the boys and girls at Facebook didn't like it.
Yes, Facebook said we're the only people who are allowed to scrape data. Facebook said that NYU was unauthorized in their actions. And that Facebook takes them seriously, and that they must do everything in their power to investigate and protect their platform. And so they have shut down not only the research, but also the personal profiles of the researchers who were conducting this study.
Then Facebook had the audacity to say it was because of the FTC, and that's why we had to do it.
But conveniently, the FTC, seeing this whole thing play out, actually came out and said, no, that's not true. We're not the ones who are forcing this. Facebook was citing the aftermath of the Cambridge Analytica scandal whenever Facebook data scraped and sent all of the data to that political organization. But because this NYU organization is one, all the users are consenting. They have given the explicit permission to NYU to record this data and its academic research. They get a little bit more leeway with what they're allowed to do.
And so the NY researchers are calling on the social network to, hey, please reinstate the accounts. You know, here's the FTC's letter saying we're doing good things here. We're not data scraping. We're not trying to sell the information and make money off this. We are really, really an academic endeavor trying to do academic research.
Right, but anytime someone tries to shed light on the opaque business practices, especially around surveillance-based advertising of Facebook, I guess Facebook's not going to just open up the doors and let someone come expose how terrible they are.
I would imagine the folks there in California are gonna have a study and put together the committee, maybe the same committee that decided to kick former President Trump off of Facebook. They'll bring it to that committee and let them decide when they next meet a year or so from now, and then that's when they may or may not allow NYU back on. Or
That would
this
actually be a
NYU.
valid use of that organization, of those group of people. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
And we will continue to look for this and follow up. And as we do on so many things, we will follow up as we're doing on the next story. The Joint Cyber Defense Collaborative, which was kind of talked about several months back.
They've shouted Avengers Assemble. You have Amazon, you have Google, you have Microsoft, also AT&T, CrowdStrike, FireEye, Verizon. They are bringing in anybody and everybody who is a big boy in the tech space. Let's squash this.
And, you know, this is a good thing. They're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to be proactive instead of reactive. And that's what's going to have to happen to win the war against these cyber crimes, having the government partner with these private companies. These are the smartest folks in the room, you know, in the world. And if you can do the right things for the right reasons and shut this down, it makes everybody's life that much better.
Oh, yeah. It's not one single. It's not the Biden administration saying this is how we're going to do it. It's everybody at a table saying, OK, you have your expertise and you have your expertise and you have your expertise. Let's pull all of it together so that we can make everybody better. And that's, you know, as a collective, as a joint collective, you know, we will make the country safer.
That's right. I mean, you got the big software companies that, you know, you've got the telecom providers, AT&T and Verizon. You've got firewall companies like Palo Alto and Cisco. You've got these big, huge companies that each one of them brings their specific expertise or with, you know, whatever they bring to the table. They're all at the table now. And yes, like you said, Avengers Assemble, and here they all come running. And I'm excited to see where this goes.
Absolutely. You really have to feel better about the future knowing that this is in place.
And speaking of the future, we kind of talked about this last week, and with a study of how many people are interested in electric and or hybrid vehicles. And this week, President Biden is set to sign an executive order that by the year 2030, at least 50% of the cars have to be electric.
Yeah, that lines up very conveniently with those numbers.
Most like President Biden is being clairvoyant.
That's what we'll say. He was in his divination classes at Hogwarts whenever he saw this one coming. It's good that we are making this push to have more of our vehicles be electrified, because the report that came out from the UN the past week about the climate was unhappy. And so anything we can do to make it better is a good thing.
Absolutely. And so this is it just fascinating, the timing of here comes the study that about half the people are interested in electric cars. And then here comes the politician saying, hey, we're going to make sure that at least half all the cars are electric. That was just very convenient.
It's almost like there are people who have been doing this for a long time and they are good at their jobs.
Yes. And look, the folks at Ford and GM and Chrysler or whatever they're called now, Stellantis. Yes, we've read the same reports and we think that's a good thing. So the manufacturers are lined up and great, by the year 2030, at least half of us will be able to go out and buy an electric vehicle.
Right. And if this infrastructure bill passes, the bipartisan $1 trillion bill has some money for electric vehicles in it. And the $3.5 trillion bill is currently in discussions has even more money for electric vehicle infrastructure in it. So if those pass, you know, it won't just be something which needs to be mandated. It might be convenient. It might just naturally be the better option to start buying electric vehicles.
And so we'll see where this plays out, because we've got several years to get there. By the time 2030 comes around, I think you're going to see a lot more than just half of the vehicles are going to be electric.
The biggest problem that you run up against is that the average lifespan of a car is 12 years. And so people who bought a car in 2018, the next car they buy will be in 2030. And half of all people who, you know, are inside of that 12-year window just won't be buying a new car. And so, you know, you run up to the cars are just a long-term investment in general.
Well, I don't think people keep that car for 12 years. I think that that vehicle stays on the road for 12 years, but it might have two or three different owners over that 12 years. So, you know, 4 years from now, if I buy a new car today, 4 years from now, I'm looking at a new car. And then I'm going to sell my car and somebody's going to buy it. And then 4 years after that, that they've had it, then they're going to. So, yeah, you're going to see a lot of turnover in vehicles and people, you know, buying new vehicles. But if it's financially going to save me a lot of money, I don't have to buy, you know, a $30 tank of gas every week. I got to spend $3 on electricity. Well, I can do math. I mean, I can save pretty quick.
Especially if you start seeing tax incentives or things like that, wherever the government, you know, they front some of the money so that instead of spending $3, maybe it's $1. And so, or just other, if you build a charger outside of your business, maybe you receive some tax incentives. Those are things which I very much could see, because one of the problems that electric vehicles have right now is people still think about them through the lens of refilling a gas tank. And that to refill a gas tank takes like 2 minutes, maybe three, but an electric vehicle is 30 minutes. But if you put one outside of a movie theater, outside of a grocery store, outside of a coffee shop, place where people naturally go and spend an hour, well, that time, you don't notice it anymore. And so those are the types of innovations which are going to be necessary to really have this 50% number be possible and be plausible, as opposed to just being an executive order a decade out.
And even if you put the charging stations at Buc-ee's, so when you're on vacation, everybody spends a half hour in Buc-ee's as it is. So pull up, charge your vehicle, and go into Buc-ee's for the half an hour, and then get back in and get on the road going to grandma's house. I mean,
exactly.
In the continued follow-up, it's that time, you know, we have to talk about SpaceX, because Elon Musk is going to, you know, penalize us if we don't. We had mentioned before where their dishes were prone to thermal shutdowns if it got over 122 degrees, or if it got below a certain, I forgot how cold it had to be, but the dishes were shutting down until it got back to a reasonable temperatures. Well, they've now got some new and improved dishes.
Yeah, Starlink was facing the problem, especially with the fact that they sit a lot in the Pacific Northwest, and the Pacific Northwest had that huge heat wave that baked them back in early June. Well, you know, here they go. This is the next step. They're in the beta. They're working on the kinks. And this is one of those next steps that, okay, our dishes are now comfortable sitting outside and can take the streams of the environment.
The other thing that he's mentioned is that they are now moving forward with, or having their dishes available for aircraft, ships, big trucks, and RVs, so that, okay, you're a sailboat and you're cruising around out on the ocean, or if you've got an RV going across the country and you just want to start pulling down some internet, okay, it can start tracking all of the satellites and continue getting bandwidth for you even while you're moving down the road.
This makes a lot of sense to me, that right now you're reliant on that 5G or that 4G signal. And so to have something that is more stable, more dedicated, that it's not cellular, this is something which I could see being very important, even in a commercial capacity, that, you know, having freight trucks that are shipping, you know, traveling up and down a corridor. The fact that they're not worried about, okay, you know, am I someplace, you know, that has good cell coverage? If I'm, you know, on I-49 between Shreveport and Alexandria, do I have good coverage there? This is something which solves a problem.
Or if you're on the interstate driving through the middle of Montana or out in Wyoming somewhere where there is nothing but deer and elk and, you know, that kind of thing's running around up there. Well, this makes it a whole lot easier for you to stay in constant communication with these autonomous-driven trucks as they're going across the countryside, and that's really exciting that they're progressing along. They are still in beta. We need to let everybody know that SpaceX is still in beta, so they're not full-fledged. They've not emerged. They're doing what they've said they're going to do right now. There are a little over 1,700 satellites that are spinning around the Earth, and they've got about 90,000 users so far.
Yeah, so these are good beta numbers, and that's, you know, they expect to exit beta sometime in the fall. I think that they're going to slow roll their expansion, because this is something that you want your users to trust you. You want to have high uptime. And so I think that they probably will start to push upwards on 100,000 over the next couple months. But I don't expect them to have all 500,000 people who are on the waiting list join by the end of the year, or maybe even by, you know, spring of next year. I could see them saying, look, you know, we want to make sure that everyone who's on has a stable connection, has high uptime, has high reliability, even if some of you take a little bit longer to jump in.
One of the things that they've talked about is that they need to have 2,400 satellites in space before they can emerge from beta. So if they still have about 700 satellites to go, if they're putting up 60 to 100 every launch, okay, then by October they can probably get there. And the satellites that they're putting up, they're laser linked, so that it's kind of like, you know, in the cellular communications where you do the handoff, the same thing will happen with the satellite dishes. And that's where the reliability is going to really kick in from SpaceX.
Pretty cool stuff. Last story we're going to talk about today, this one was surprising. It's a crypto hacking story, crypto loot theft, which are our traditional topics. But this one was surprising because they gave part of it back.
Yeah, so there's a crypto wallet called Poly Network. And they had $611 million stolen by hackers. And they put out this real heart-tugging letter saying, please give the money back. And within 24 hours, the hackers have almost given a third of it back already.
Yeah, this is kind of surprising. Poly also said that, you know, law enforcement in any country around the world would love to come tail you for your crime. But if you've only given back 250 of the 600 million, that's still 350 million floating out there that you've still stolen. So I'm not really sure what exactly is happening here. Maybe the hackers said we stole too much and we don't need all that money. We only need 350 as opposed to 600 million. I don't know. This is weird to me.
Yeah, I'm. What's the incentive to give the money back? Did these criminals all of a sudden get a conscience?
I don't know. Because it was a huge, I mean, 600 million makes it one of the largest hacks in decentralized finance history. And so maybe they just didn't want the notoriety. But if you're trying to remove all traces of yourself and not be tracked, it feels like putting the money back just adds more opportunity to leave a clue somewhere, leave one little cookie, leave one little digital signature, and I would have taken the money and run. I just don't get it here.
I don't either. And so this is a crypto wallet. This is not the actual cryptocurrency. Poly's network is one of those holding sites for all of your cryptocurrency. In this case, they stole Shiba Coin, Binance tokens, and God knows whatever else. But it was interesting that, yeah, okay, we took 600 million, but here's 256 back. We'll call it even.
And so one of the interesting things to note is that there was a custom token that the attackers themselves created that they also returned a portion of that token. And so maybe they said, hey, you know, we have some of our own money invested into Hacker Coin. We need to make sure the value of this keeps going up.
you're giving that coin, that your own coin, are you giving that back because, hey, we gotcha and we're so cocky, we're so bold, we're giving you back some of our own coin that we created? Try and find us now?
I'm curious to keep following up on this one because I really don't know what the next twist or turn in the story is.
And we absolutely will do that. And we do also want to thank General Informatics. General Informatics is an information technology firm with a mission to make our clients even more successful through the best use of technology. From the beginning, we have maintained our commitment to meeting the growing needs of our clients through continuous innovation. With over 20 years of experience and a team of more than 70 plus engineers, programmers, and designers, GI has evolved to become the leading IT partner of businesses, schools, and government agencies. Our managed services team can run your digital infrastructure or support your team on an on-demand basis, letting you focus on your business strengths. This has become a proven formula, so proven that 98% of our clients continue to do business with us year after year. The true testament to GI's success, however, has been strategic support to our clients' growth. Today, GI has a record number of clients as the fastest growing companies in the Inc. 500 5000 list. Whether you need IT services, new technology, or have a question, visit us on the web at geninf.com.
And if you enjoyed our show today, we are here on Talk 107.3 FM every Saturday at 4 p.m. And the show reruns Sundays also at 4 p.m. If you missed any part of the show or you'd like to go back and hear previous episodes, check us out as a podcast available on almost every major podcast platform, including TuneIn, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Deezer, and more. When you're there, be sure to subscribe so you get notified every time a new episode is posted. If you like our show or have a suggestion, let us know on Twitter and Facebook at TechGumbo Show or text us at 225-255-0431 to win your Tech Gumbo mug. Thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.